It's On Second Thought. I'm Adam Ragusea. In recent months, we have heard more hate speech, and we've been seeing things like a Ku Klux Klan banner flying on a building in Dahlonega, Georgia. White supremacy is in the national news, too.
The alt-right movement is a white nationalist movement that's associated with racism, misogyny, and anti-Semitism. The alt-right used to exist mostly on the internet, but with the rise of Donald Trump and his chief strategist, Steve Bannon, the movement is starting to hold conferences.
So the question is, how should we respond? What should law enforcement do as white supremacy groups get more organized? Joining me from the Indiana Public Media Studios is Janine Bell. She's a professor of law at Indiana University. Hi, Janine.
Hi.
Thanks for being here with us. Also with us on the line is filmmaker Mike Ramsdell. He kept company with hate groups to produce the 2010 documentary, The Anatomy of Hate. Welcome, Mike.
Thank you very much.
Janine, let me go to you. Do you buy the idea that white supremacist hate groups are on the rise in one respect or another, or is it just that the lens of media attention has focused on them for any number of reasons?
I think both are happening, meaning that they are both on the rise and there's been increased attention to the fact that they're in existence. But they've always been with us, and the Southern Poverty Law Center has indicated that they've been on the rise for quite some time.
Mike, same question to you. Do you think that there really is a rise going on, or is it just that we're more paying attention?
Yeah, I would agree that it's both. I think the thing that my understanding draws people to these groups more than anything, more than even, you know, the quote unquote hateful ideology, is fear. And fear has been pumped into this culture and the society at such a massive rate over the last decade, and it continues to increase, that as that fear continues to increase, people are going to look for more and more ways to react to that fear and a response to that fear. And unfortunately, these kinds of groups attract a lot of people.
Yeah, ideas about a threat to a so-called white America have been in circulation for a long time, but certainly those are some of the explicit themes of the most recent presidential election and some of the politics that are happening in Washington right now. Probably one of the most prominent white supremacists of our day is Richard Spencer. He's a founding figure of the alt-right movement, and he actually rejects the term white supremacist as applied to himself. He says that he's more of a separatist. Here's a clip. Here he is talking to NPR's Lakshmi Singh.
But you also believe that that people of different races inherently do not get along. Isn't that right?
I think world history believes that. I mean, I don't... It's not just my opinion. I don't see very many counterexamples.
Both of you guys, I'll start with Janine. I want to get your take. Do you buy that there is a meaningful distinction between white supremacy, which generally is, you know, everyone talks about that... Sorry, there's a consensus, a widespread consensus in the country that is bad. And then there's this sort of new kind of emergent idea that's creeping more into polite society, this almost kind of white separatism, this idea that people of common ancestry should endeavor to live together, much as they have in many places for a very long time. Janine, what do you think?
First of all, this is not a new idea. White separatism is not a new idea. White supremacists, who are frequently white separatists as well, have long called for a five-state white nation out west in which they lived alone, right, meaning whites alone, and people of color lived in the rest of the United States. So this is absolutely not new. And it's something that white supremacists have long advocated. And it's an attempt to carve out a space that isn't as loaded as white supremacy. But if you study hate crimes, white separatism is absolutely every bit as loaded. Because if you look at it logically, why is it that they want to remain separate? Right? Why is it they don't want to have anything to do with people who are different from themselves? And you see, within their reasoning, there is the idea that they're at the top of the food chain racially, and others are beneath them, which is the core idea of white supremacy.
Mike Ramsdale, in your research for your documentary, did you feel like you encountered any distinction, meaningful distinction, between white supremacy, the belief that whites are intrinsically better, and white separatism, the idea that a European identity is something to be preserved in a nation or even strengthened?
Yeah, it's you know, that's one of the interesting things about being kind of taking a peek behind the curtain into the movement, is that there's so many different flags and banners that people wave to describe themselves. Christian identity groups who believe that it's, you know, written in the Bible that races should be separate and the white race is superior. White supremacists, obviously, white separatists. I heard some people call themselves non-white extinctionists. It's just all different names for, yes, this belief that, well, you know, as the gentleman was saying in the clip, that races are not meant to be together, et cetera. And there is no way that can be a nonviolent, or that can be a productive mindset, or that can't be looked at with the same kind of understanding of how hurtful and harmful those belief systems are. And I'll even take it to the next step of saying that what was most fascinating to me is that same kind of contention for other races that exists, that we see from the outside looking in, when you're inside, there's that same contention among the different white supremacy groups, you know, whether it's the Aryan Nations against, or the Christian identities. They all believe that their belief system is the correct one. And so right now they're kind of coagulated under this flag of white supremacists or white separatists against other races. But if you waved a magic wand tomorrow and gave them their own free state as they asked for, it would be a matter of moments before they were all in contention against each other. That's just the nature of that kind of thought process. And that's the thing about it that I think is the big flag that we all have to be aware of, is that it doesn't matter how it's labeled. History doesn't show that races don't get along. History shows that the more you try to separate them, the more you try to build walls, the more violent societies get. And that's the history we have to pay attention to.
I'm talking to Mike Ramsdale. He's a filmmaker who made a documentary in 2010 called The Anatomy of Hate. Also with us is Janine Bell, law professor at Indiana University. We're talking about the resurgence of white supremacy groups and what our response should be to it. Social response, law enforcement response. Typically, when we think of hate groups or white hate groups, white supremacy, I suppose the mind conjures up images of the KKK, large-scale syndicated, big hate groups that are conspicuous, that, you know, there's nothing more conspicuous than the KKK getup. Is that really what we're talking about still, Janine?
No. There are individuals who are entirely unaffiliated with any organized hate groups. Dylann Roof, for instance, was an individual who was not affiliated with an organized hate group, who murdered 9 individuals at a church in Charleston in 2015. So you're also talking about individuals who will burn a cross on a neighbor's lawn. You're talking about individuals who will put up flyers on professors' doors. So there are a wide number of actions that individuals may engage in that are not connected to organized groups.
I suppose it's analogous to what we're seeing in radical Islamic terrorism. Oh, I can't believe I just said that. It's the term that they always want everybody to use. The idea that you have people who are, for example, inspired by ISIS, read about ISIS online, take action in their own communities that is inspired by that, but they don't have direct organizational links to any particular terrorist group. Is that a good analogy?
Yes, it is. In fact, white supremacist organizations a number of years ago started encouraging individuals to act as lone wolves, not encouraged by the organization, and go out and carry out the mission of the organization. One of those individuals in Bloomington many years ago killed...
Where you are in Indiana.
A graduate student on campus, a Korean graduate student. He also went to Chicago, killed a Northwestern basketball coach, Ricky Birdsong, shot at individuals in Champaign, Urbana. So... This is encouraged specifically by the organizations for them to go out and carry out the organization's mission, which is, in some cases, to rid the space of people of color.
Let's talk about solutions. In the 60s era of the civil rights movement, there were some new laws that helped strengthen the federal government's role to intervene with these kinds of problems. And then in 2009, President Obama increased penalties for federal hate crimes. Here in Georgia, there was a man who was arrested with an anthrax-like toxin, and his social media history shows ties to white supremacist forums online. Janine, what should law enforcement be doing differently today? Can we learn from our history and how we've dealt with hate groups or hate crimes in the past?
Yes, law enforcement organizations should be enforcing hate crime legislation to the extent that it exists in a particular jurisdiction. The vast majority of states have hate crime legislation. I, for instance, live in a state that does not have hate crime legislation. Mm-hmm. But most states do have some form of hate crime legislation, and individuals in the state would be better protected if law enforcement was active in investigating hate crime. That is everything from, you know, telling the community that hate crime exists. Many individuals who are targeted by hate crime don't even know that it's a crime to burn a cross on your lawn. They may be unaware of or worried about calling the police. And that's a situation where you need outreach by the police department with communities that are targeted by hate crime.
Mike Ramsdell, in the course of working on your documentary, The Anatomy of Hate, what solutions came to mind in your head as to how to integrate these folks more into the American mainstream and to steer them away from radicalism?
That's a great question, and I'm really happy to be able to kind of provide some insight onto what I saw. And I'm not a legal expert, and I don't pretend to be, so I don't want to speak to any of those topics. But
no, but like socially.
Sure, socially. So, you know, many of those that I met, and I was at multiple rallies, I was at multiple cross burnings, and I was always, you know, there as a filmmaker. People knew I wasn't part of the movement, but they opened up and they talked with me. And most of the people that I met, young white males, obviously, without any of the attributes that this society would call, you know, of significance, meaning they didn't have the intellectual wherewithal to go on to college. They didn't have maybe the physical wherewithal to be star athletes. They were the misfits in their class. I don't know all of their family lives, but based on what I saw and interacted with, I wouldn't guess they came from the most caring and loving families. And when you're looking at yourself as a young male and you really don't have anything to give yourself significance in a culture that demands significance and demands excellence, it's a very easy step to just cross this line, and all of a sudden you put on a T-shirt that says something bad and you drink beer with some guys and you talk about being... You know, they in the white supremacy movement, they have the 14 words, which I won't repeat here, but it's the 14 words that they say, you know, that's their identity. Most of these guys would have, you know, 14 tattooed on them somewhere, but when I asked them what's the 14 words, they couldn't even repeat it. It wasn't a true hateful ideology. They weren't brought to it because of that was absolutely passionate about what they believe. They were brought to it because all of us are looking for some place to belong and exist. And I think you can draw, if you want to talk about drawing parallels to ISIS and to other violent, you know, to gang life in inner cities and things like that, that kind of desire to be associated with others, that kind of desire for acceptance and significance in a culture and society, you know, in this, and as we pump the society so full of fear and demand so much more of what it takes to be successful and give fewer opportunities to achieve that success, I think all of those things come together into one collective, and that's where you start to see what we're seeing. Now, I don't know that there's an easy answer to that, but sure. I don't think it is as scary as they're just evil, hateful people and we need to get rid of them.
got to give people something to belong to, and if not, they're going to find something themselves.
Absolutely.
That's Mike Ramsdell. He's a filmmaker. His documentary is called The Anatomy of Hate. We also talked there to Janine Bell, law professor at Indiana University. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.